We're all used to the idea by now that the internet allows customers to interact with businesses, readers to connect with writers. It gives passionate amateurs ways to share their expertise, and it lets everybody collaborate in new and fundamentally different ways. But there's one laggard in the rush to revolutionize and reinvent, the biggest, slowest, most change-averse, and top-down institution in existence: government. A year ago, Don Tapscott joined us to talk about some of the ways that the web has changed business and about his book, Wikinomics. In just a moment, he'll be with us to talk about his new project to let the internet make government more open, more participatory, more efficient, maybe even smaller and cheaper, and at the same time get citizens more engaged in democracy. Later on in the hour, we'll talk about nuclear proliferation and celebrity activism with Michael Douglas, who's in town to lobby Congress. But first, government 2.0. What ideas do you have to use new technology to make government better? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. The email address is talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. Don Tapscott is the author of Wikinomics and the chairman of a think tank called Engenera. He joins us from the studios at SS VoiceOver in Pembroke Pines, Florida. Don, thanks very much for being with us today.
I'm happy to be here, as it were.
Okay, as it were, a virtual guest. What governments are you talking to, and are they listening?
Well, Engenera has launched a multi-million dollar research project that's funded by countries from around the world. So the usual suspects: United States, Canada, the UK, but others such as New Zealand, Finland, Portugal, and so on. And the goal is to understand the whole next wave of government. I'm convinced that governments are now positioned to go through some of the very profound changes that the private companies have been going through. And this is probably the biggest change in not just the way governments create and deliver services, but in the nature of governance itself, democracy and the relationship between citizens and the state. Probably the biggest change in a century.
Can you give us any concrete examples of things that are being used now in the U.S. government?
Well, absolutely. We've got initiatives underway like Intellipedia, where by opening up and sharing information, ironically, the CIA is better able to understand the bad guys and what's going on. This is essentially a collaborative platform that uses wikis and other tools. We've got all kinds of...
Obviously, it's a secret one. It's not available to the public, though.
Well, it may well be. If they're opening up to various agencies to contribute information, why not open it up to the public?
I think that the CIA would rather tell the public than tell the Defense Intelligence Agency.
Well, fair enough. There are lots of big cultural barriers here. But, you know, if you or I discover something kind of weird somewhere, maybe there ought to be a vehicle whereby we can do that. Or another good example, seeing as we're on security and law enforcement, is a lot of governments are doing this thing called government portals, where they're trying to bring together all kinds of government information and capabilities in a single place, a single window or a shopping spot for citizens. But what the FBI has done is use something that's part of the Web 2.0 called widgets, where rather than you come to us and learn about the 10 most wanted, these little widgets go out and implant themselves in appropriate places, like, say, a cash register in a convenience store, and tell the shopkeeper who are the 10 most wanted. So that's just a tip of the iceberg in terms of some very big changes in terms of how governments operate. The biggest ones, of course, are in the nature of democracy itself.
And what are you proposing there? I mean, the way government interacts with its citizens has typically been a one-way conversation.
Well, fair, touche. And the old model, let me stereotype it. I'm a politician. Listen to this 30-second negative ad where I attack my opponent on an issue that, by the way, if you're young, you could care less about. And then go vote for me, and I'm going to broadcast to you for 4 years, and we get to do it all over again. That model is inappropriate for a whole new generation of young people, 80 million of them. I call them the Net Generation. This is my upcoming book called Grown Up Digital. And these kids want to interact. They want to collaborate, and they want to be engaged. They don't want to be passive recipients like their boomer parents were of watching television for 24 hours a week. So these kids want a different model, and there are all kinds of really exciting things that we can do. I'll give you an example if you want. In this program all around the world, we're working to catalyze these initiatives. So in Canada, they're working on something called Canada Jam. That'll be a 3-day conversation of all Canadians on the web. And the topic will be, who knows? It'll actually be chosen by the Governor General. The Queen's representative is going to chair the discussion. And it could be on something like global warming or how to make the Canadian economy better or whatever. And we use collaborative filtering, it's called. So just like you can rate something on Amazon or on Dig, it says what's cool and what people think are important. Appropriate articles on the internet or YouTube, all the best videos kind of come to the fore because lots of people rate them highly or view them. So these ideas will come forward. And this is not, you know, Ross Perot in the electronic town hall. You get to vote on the evening news every night. That's a kind of a bad idea, a.k.a. the electronic mob. Democracy is a lot more than majority rule on a nightly basis. One of the things about is protecting the rights of minorities. But rather, this is a new way of reaching out and engaging citizens, getting them involved, and all kinds of initiatives would come out of that and good things would happen. That's one of a couple of dozen big ideas that we're working on in this program.
We're talking with Don Tapscott about ways the web and new technology can improve government. If you have such ideas, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And let's talk with Michael. Michael with us on the line from St. Louis in Missouri.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to ask if you have read the two recent articles in Democracy, one about Wikinomics and the other was a rebuttal talking about the need to filter and provide expertise to prevent the electronic mob. I'd be interested to hear.
Yep, go ahead, Don.
Hear a little more about that.
Sure, absolutely. Well, there's a role for filtering. I mean, we have indirect democracy for some good reasons. You know, the creation of legislation is a complicated thing that requires a lot of thought. And just because you can create a wiki where large numbers of people can come together and create an encyclopedia that has great quality, Wikipedia, you can also create programs and policies. I mean, the Green Party in several countries has created its program through a wiki. But having said that, there's a role for the intermediary in all, not just in government, but in marketplaces and in every institution in society. And I'm not suggesting that we have some kind of mob rule here, far from it. I'm just saying that there are new ways now, new tools and technologies whereby citizens can get input, where they can collaborate and learn from each other, where government people can learn from citizens, and where new kinds of discussions and conversations can occur. And when that happens, I can't think that anything but good will come from it.
And presumably, if citizens are more involved, more engaged, they will be more invested in whatever result emerges.
Well, absolutely. And just take something like healthcare, for example. And you can apply this, by the way, to any. I mentioned security and law enforcement, but this could be healthcare or any other institution whereby we get citizens engaged in creating their own healthcare.
Michael, thanks very much for the phone call. Appreciate it. We'll take more of your calls with Don Tapscott on ideas to improve government with new technology. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking today with Don Tapscott, the author of the book Wikinomics, about how government can use new technologies like wikis to reduce costs and engage younger voters. What ideas do you have to use new technology to make government better? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And you can read what other listeners have to say on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And Don, one of these things you're talking about is this participatory and getting a lot of input electronically from citizens all over the country. But can't that sometimes overwhelm government? If at some point input becomes, an enemy to efficiency, doesn't it?
Well, sure, of course. But I'm not talking just about input. I'm talking about new models that are less paternalistic, whereby citizens actually become involved and take responsibility for doing certain things. Let me give an example. The Holocaust Museum for Darfur. Here's a new kind of partnership. It involves the U.S. State Department, many hundreds, thousands, actually, of photographers, private citizens, NGOs, and private companies. And you can start with a satellite image of Earth and zoom down into any one of 1,400 villages in Darfur and understand concretely the devastation that's occurred. And this is all enabled by the new web, whereby, just like in the private sector, these old vertically integrated companies are unbundling into focus companies that work in networks. I call them business webs. So in the public sector, we can have new kinds of networked partnerships in society to do things that were previously not possible. And this is not about privatization of government or outsourcing or anything like that. There's, in the case of this Holocaust Museum, there's nothing in the first place to outsource. We're talking about a new division of labor in society, a new way of orchestrating capability for citizenship. And the possibilities, I think, are just huge.
Give us an example. You mentioned that museum, but something more concrete that might be, affect our daily lives.
Well, something like healthcare. You're born, you get a website. That's what should occur. And this becomes your electronic patient record. And you have complete transparency into it, and you will take responsibility for a lot of your own health, healthcare. So right now we can see this with all kinds of collaborations occurring around this issue where patients get involved. So you've got things like WebMD where patients get information, but then there are blogs and discussion groups like Doctissimo in France, involves 10 million people. You've got question and answer websites like Yahoo Answers or wikis like Flu Wiki and Cancer Wiki. Then there are things that we call swarm intelligence like ratemds.com and CERMO and Organized Wisdom. And then there are these fabulous support communities. So if you have a rare disease, you can build a community with others on Caring Bridge or Care Pages or Daily Strength and so on. And this is about a new model of how citizens can become engaged. So if you have, say, diabetes and you've got great tools and the ability to collaborate and you can test your own blood sugar level, you will do that. And some of the burden of healthcare will be moved onto individual patients who will happily use these powerful tools to be healthier. And bottom line, you get better, cheaper government.
Let's get some listeners again in the conversation. 800-989-8255. Rich is on the line from Boston, Massachusetts.
Hi. I'd like you to talk about the idea of using the Internet as a tool of public oversight of the government, that we could use the Internet to make the government completely transparent legally and financially, and whether or not you think that's reasonable and how we would accomplish that in the next couple of years.
Well, you know, it's a great question, and it's happening right now. But typically, it's not being led by government. It's being led by other institutions, like Google. Google, for example, has a whole government environment where you can get information on, say, the American Forces Information Service or White House News, government executives, their top government stories. And they're finding new ways to make government information available in ways that governments couldn't do that. And if governments don't smarten up and start opening up and making information more available, they will be rendered naked by other forces. And the point here is that transparency is a good thing. You know, sunlight is the best disinfectant. And, you know, if you're going to be naked, being fit is no longer optional. You know, you better be buff. And I think transparency is not about Sarbanes-Oxley, the SEC, or avoiding the perp walk or anything like that. This is a new force for public accountability. The private sector, it's a new force for growth and innovation and trusting relationships.
Well, C-SPAN cubed. Anyway, Rich, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can talk now with Ben. And Ben's on the line from Cleveland.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was curious as to how this kind of technology in use in government would affect the end user, the person who's actually looking at the information, the type of politician, in other words, that we'd get, who was going to be savvy enough and technically you know, savvy enough to use this type of information and how that might change people who are being elected.
Well, absolutely. And you can see it right now in the primaries. I mean, obviously, Obama gets it better than the others. And I think if there's one single thing that will go down in terms of saying why he won the primary, which he likely will, it was that he used social networks and he understood the power of youth. If you actually look at the data, he's often losing in 40 and above. But it's these young people by the millions and arguably more that are becoming engaged. It raises a huge issue. Should he become the president? I don't think they're going to be satisfied with having just elected somebody. I think these kids, and we've talked to many of them, they want a different model of government. They want to be engaged. They want to be involved in the creation of policy. They want to participate in their communities. You know that civic action is at the highest level in two decades, and political action has been rising for the last decade as well.
Senator Obama has talked about, among other things, bringing the idea of the fireside chat to the web.
Well, and that's a great idea, but the fireside chat isn't the old broadcast model. You know, it's more like a fireside conversation that's a real two-way thing. The technology absolutely exists to do that, and he's going to have millions of young people pushing really hard and wanting him to do that, and I think democracy will benefit as a result.
Would you expect a White House blog, an Oval Office blog?
Oh, sure. He should blog, absolutely. It's like every CEO of every company should have a blog as well, but old paradigms, I can say that because I wrote the book Paradigm Shift, okay?
Okay.
I didn't invent the word paradigm, but old paradigms die hard. So somebody like Jonathan Schwartz, the CEO of Sun Microsystems, takes over this troubled company, and he says, everyone in the company can have a blog, and I'm going to blog too. And his PR and legal department go ballistic, saying, what are you talking about? Anyone can issue a press release? And he says, well, we'll have some guidelines. Here's one. Don't do anything stupid. Write about something you know something about. Make it interesting. You know, in 3 years, they've never had a problem. People can be trusted. People will do the right thing if you give them a chance and set up the conditions whereby good things happen.
Thanks very much for the call, Ben. And what you raise in that example is an interesting point. One of the problems that government has is that if a government official commits anything to paper or, in these days, to a computer screen, it sort of becomes policy. What you're talking about in these collaborations, with these wikis and other kinds of things, is this is going to evolve over time. That may not end up being the policy.
Well, absolutely. And that's going to require a big cultural change in the body politic, basically. Right now, it's very predatory, really. You know, a politician muses on something and the press is all over him. That's a culture that's got to change. And because in this new environment, you got to be able to think out loud. You got to be able to throw out some crazy ideas. But I think this young generation, this net generation, coming not just into the workforce and into the marketplace, but becoming citizens, they're going to push for a more open and forgiving and truly conversationalist attitude.
Here's an email from Jason in Denver. I currently work for the federal government. My question comment is, how can a bureaucracy as large as the federal government begin to posit such change? We cannot even replace our 6-year-old computers, which are outdated, let alone begin a wiki.
Well, I think it's a great point. And this is a cultural change, and old paradigms meet resistance, and leaders of old paradigms have great difficulty embracing the new. You know, I was talking to the CIO of a state where the governor had banned Facebook. And I asked him, why did he do that? And he said, well, because young people are wasting their time, which to me is bizarre. If young people are wasting their time, it's not a technology problem, it's a management problem. And I said, well, what was the effect of banning Facebook? And he said, well, everyone went to MySpace. So, I mean, these tools are there. You know, what the kids tell us is electronic mail, and that's what we use in governments today. It's a great technology for sending a thank you letter to one of your friend's parents, you know, but that's about it. Well, we have wikis, blogs, jams, as I was mentioning, with Canada Jam, Habitat Jam, had a conversation with 40,000 people. IBM had a jam of 400,000 people over a three-day period. We have tags and telepresence and all kinds of powerful new technologies. And talk about being a penny wise and pound foolish. You know, you can't replace a computer. These technologies could dramatically change the way that governments collaborate. They could radically drop costs and result in profound changes to the quality and delivery of services to citizens. So I think we're looking for a new generation of government leader, basically, one that understands that the world is changing and there are great opportunities before us.
Let's talk with Laura. Laura with us from Centennial, Colorado.
Yes, hi. I have a perfect example of that collaborative aspect of using technology. I've been sitting on a 21-member commission here in Centennial, Colorado, writing what's called a home rule charter, which is like a mini constitution for the city. And early on in our process, we one of our members of our commission, as a volunteer, set up a wiki site for us. And what that allowed us to do was, in between our weekly meetings, we could do research, post that research. The other 20 people could see it. The public could see it. The public could send us comments. We could comment on each other's research. And it allowed us to comply with the Colorado Open Meetings Act, because what we called it was an open meeting, 24/7, where we were posting our ideas, our research, having that conversation on an ongoing basis when it was convenient for us during the week, during the course of our regular lives, and then we'd get back together for our weekly meeting, and we would already have done a lot of the work and the sharing, and the public was allowed to see all of that, so we were able to comply with the law.
Well, it's a great point. And, you know, these initiatives are happening all across the country and all around the world, really, but they're typically happening in a bottom-up way or from an individual. You look at somebody like the state legislator for Utah, Steve Urquhart, who created a site called politicopia.com, where people can post and edit information about legislation under consideration in the Senate. And you know, when colleagues complain, you know, about not liking what people have said in their bills, his response is simple. Well, that's not my problem, basically. There's a new model of democracy emerging here.
Laura, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you for your topic today.
We're talking with Don Tapscott, the author of Wikinomics, about how technology, like wikis, can improve the government. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go to Peggy. Peggy with us from Wilmington in North Carolina.
Hello. I'm currently going through an application for Medicaid for my dad, which is a mountain of things to learn. So it's even taken me a couple of months just to get basic information. And I found myself really being annoyed that I couldn't get electronic information because I'm so used to doing it in all other areas of my life.
So this is all paper?
Well, yeah. I have to go to the bank and provide 3 years of bank statements, hard copy. I have to get letters from the insurance company stating what his benefits are. I have to not only check with the VA, I have to either get a statement of eligibility or non-eligibility. Tons of things that are, I'm sure, available electronically, but can't be accepted by my county government electronically.
And that seems like a pretty easy fix, doesn't it, Don?
Well, absolutely. You know, information when it's bits moves around a lot faster than when it's atoms. And bits are a lot easier to find than atoms, and they're a lot easier to organize and to ship around. And, I mean, in fairness to governments, you know, these institutions grew up about the same time as the old corporation 100 years ago. We needed bureaucracy. I mean, bureaucracy back then was a cool word. It was the latest hot management idea. And we needed to have accountability, and we needed to avoid patronage and graft and corruption and so on. But these were all done through traditional organizational models and structures, through traditional systems that were largely physical, and through traditional approaches to the relationship between citizens and the state, where the citizenry was inert. You know, we had good public accountability, as good as we could, but citizens were not engaged. And now the digital revolution is creating an opportunity to change all of that. That's why I call it government 2.0. This is a second generation, if you like, of government in our time. I don't think there's anything less than that occurring.
Let's see if we can get one last caller in. This is Dave from Gardner in Massachusetts.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. I'd like to point out there's one pretty good example here in the U.S. where someone has applied fairly recent modern management technology to government, and that was in Indianapolis, Indiana, under the two terms of Mayor Graham Richard, I believe is his name. And he applied what is generally called Six Sigma technologies to the government there and made some very startling improvements in terms of its efficiency and effectiveness that citizens could actually relate to, even though I think all the web stuff is fun to talk about.
Any concrete examples, Dave?
Probably the best example was that all everybody related to there was he moved the amount of time it took on average to fix a pothole in Indianapolis from 2 weeks to 4 hours. And he did it by getting down to the root causes of the delays that were involved, from the amount of paperwork that was involved, from assigning people to work, how many people actually made it to the site, how many people were standing around watching one guy do it. And one of the ways he incented the unions to do this is he took a portion of the money saved by the town, by the city of Indianapolis, and put it in a fund for the union so that every Christmas these guys got a substantial bonus. I think it was like $400.
Now that's thinking outside the box. Dave.
And he also, as I remember, has a book out called High Performance Government is Good.
Okay.
This is the same kind of same kind of manufacturing technology that Toyota has used to eclipse GM and Ford. It's also starting to penetrate.
Dave, I'm afraid we're running out of time, so I'm going to have to cut you off. I apologize for that. But thanks very much for the phone call. And Don Tapscott, thank you very much for your time today.
Oh, my pleasure.
We want to end with, a crazy idea maybe from Gene in Louisville, Kentucky. I'd like to see a taxpayer have the ability to designate where their tax dollars will be spent, whether for defense or the national parks. Why couldn't we go to a government website with budget items and pick what we want to fund? This would cut up a lot of lobby efforts. Well, cut out a lot of interests in Congress, too. We'll talk more about this later. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.